good evening. It is time once again for the Mike Malloy program. Tonight's program is in honor... Oh, I can't do it. Never mind. Never mind. It's all right. Welcome to the program. It's about 7 past the hour. This is our Halloween show. Boy, time just rips by when you're having fun, doesn't it? Seems like not more than a year ago we were doing this very same program. Here we are again. Samhain. All right. As I usually do, very quickly, for people who have stuck with this program all these years, I know you probably think, oh, Jesus, he's not going to do that Samhain thing again. Yeah, I am. I really am. Monday night is actually Halloween, and we will be rebroadcasting this program Monday night so that we can take Molly out trick-or-treating. Yes, we take the kid trick-or-treating. And fully aware, as some psychologists say, it'll probably corrupt her and destroy her. Give me a treat or I'll do some bad. You know, I mean, all that crapola. She likes to go trick-or-treating. We like to take her. She goes with her little friends from school. And this year for trick-or-treating night, she is Hermione from Harry Potter series. The young Hermione, the first Hermione, the little one. So anyway, that's what we're doing Monday night. So tonight, and if you want to tune in, I don't know why you would, but if you want to tune in Monday night, you'll hear a rebroadcast of this program. This is our Samhain program. Samhain. It's written as though it were pronounced Samhain. Matter of fact, the first time I saw it, I went to a Wiccan friend of mine. This is like 30, 40 years ago, and said, hey, happy Samhain. Oh, my God. By the way, this hour is sponsored by Janice Cumlian. Cumlian? Janice Cumlian. Thank you, Janice. No message, just a sponsorship. Yeah, I said, happy Samhain. She said, no. It's Samhain. It's Celtic. Anyway, it dates back to the ancient Celts who lived 2,000 years ago. Contrary to what some believe, this is not a celebration of a Celtic god of the dead. Instead, it is a Celtic word, Samhain is, meaning summer's end. The Celts believed that summer came to an end on October 31st and the new year began on November 1st, as we now date these months. Back then, I don't know that they had October and November. But that's immaterial. November 1st was the start of winter, but the Celts also followed a lunar calendar. And their celebrations began at sunset the night before winter began. Now, many today see Halloween as a pagan holiday, but that's not really accurate. The pagan holiday of Samhain is on November 1st, but we celebrate... their celebrations did and still do start at sunset on October 31st on Samhain Eve. And during the day on October 31st, Samhain Eve day, the fires within the home are extinguished. Often families would engage in a good fall cleaning to clear out old and make way for the new. And starting the winter months with fresh and clean household items. At sunset on October 31st, clans or local villages begin the formal ceremonies of Samhain by lighting a giant bonfire. The people would gather around the fire to burn crops and animals as sacrifices to the Celtic deities. It was a method of giving the gods and goddesses their share of the previous year's herd or crops. In addition, these sacred fires were a big part of the cleansing of the old year and a method to prepare for the coming new year. During the celebration, the Celts wore costumes and danced around the bonfire. Many of these dances told stories or played out the cycles of life and death, or commemorated the cycle of Wheel of Life. These costumes were adorned for three primary reasons. The first was to honor the dead, who were allowed to rise from the other world. The Celts believed that souls were set free from the land of the dead during the eve of Samhain. Those that had been trapped in the bodies of animals were released by the Lord of the Dead and sent to their new incarnations. And the wearing of these costumes signified the release of these souls into the physical world. Not all of these souls were honored and respected. Some were also feared, as they would return to the physical world and destroy crops or hide livestock or haunt the living who may have done them wrong. And the second reason for these traditional costumes was to hide from these malevolent spirits, to escape their trickery. And the final representation was a method to honor the Celtic gods and goddesses of the harvest, the fields, the flocks, giving thanks and homage to these deities who assisted the village or clan through the trials and tribulations of the previous year. So, and of course there's much more. That is just a quick synopsis of, you know, we've lost so much. We really have. The pagan religion, Wicca, the Celtic religion, was really tied to the earth, wasn't it? I mean, it was an earth-centered practice. I think people understood where home was. Home wasn't up in heaven. Home was here, and the nest had better, it'd be best to take care of the nest. Would that we could get back to some of those traditions. I don't subscribe to the gods and the goddesses bit or the land of the dead bit, but who knows? Who knows? It reminds me, though, of the fact that the world population will reach the 7 billion mark, so says the UN. Theoretically, on Monday, Samhain Eve Day. And it's interesting, you know, you ask the question, is the environmental crisis caused by the fact that there are 7 billion of us, or is it caused by the 1%? Most of us, 7 billion, are not endangering anything. We're not endangering the earth. The majority of the world's people don't destroy forests. Do you? I don't. I plant stuff. Most of us don't wipe out endangered species. Do you? I don't. The only species I kill on a regular basis are these goddamn squirrels that have been driving me crazy. Tree rats. Most of us don't pollute rivers and oceans. I don't. Do you? And most of us don't emit essentially toxic, poisonous greenhouse gases. Do you? Well, I exhale. You know, while populationist groups focus attention on the 7 billion, protesters in the worldwide Occupy movement have identified the real source of environmental destruction. Not the 7 billion, but the 1%. The handful of millionaires and billionaires who own more, consume more, control more, and destroy more than all the rest of us put together. N'est-ce pas? Ah. Yeah, I just, I get very frustrated sometimes. I remember a couple of years ago when Molly said, do we recycle? Gulp. Well, we'll start right now, honey. And so we did. And you know, we do the little recycling of the garbage and everything, compost heap, and the plastic and tin and paper and glass goes into for separate collection. But I just sometimes think, you know, this is my little tiny effort, and I just wonder, you know, what I'm up against, man. I'm up against the 1% who doesn't give a goddamn about this stuff, doesn't care. 21 past the hour. It is our Halloween program, our Samhain program. Again, speaking of trick-or-treats, the 1% that is destroying everything for us, it is good that the predations of the 1% are being pointed out by the Occupy movement. Chris Williams is the author of Ecology and Socialism, Solutions to Capitalist Ecological Crisis, and he's a professor of physics and chemistry at Pace University. And he had this to say, it isn't population growth, because we're approaching that 7 million, it isn't population growth that is causing food scarcity, or that is primarily responsible for the many accelerating global environmental crises. Even if population growth were to end today, worsening rates of starvation, the growth of slums, and ecosystem collapse would continue more or less unabated. Food production continues to outstrip population growth and therefore cannot be considered the cause of hunger. Clearly, there are very serious planetary problems of soil erosion, overfishing, deforestation, and waste disposal, to name only a few, which are putting pressure on the sustainability of food production over the long haul. However, these are all inextricably bound to questions of power and a system run in the interest of a small minority, the 1%. Where profit continually outweighs issues of hunger, or waste, or energy use, or environmental destruction. Concentrating on population confuses symptoms with causes. Boy, you get a big amen from me on that one. Don't you sometimes get tired of feeling guilty when you know that you have absolutely nothing to say, do you? Nor do I. About whether or not there is going to be a nuclear power plant built near you, or even in your state, just like we have two of them are going to be constructed here in Georgia. Georgians Against Nuclear Energy, GAIN, was put together in 1972. And here we are, 40 years later, and the sons of bitches are still, the Power Industry Southern Company, Georgia Power, are continuing. How do you react as an individual? Well, you don't. You react as a mass of people who say no. And that's what we're hoping will occur as a result of the Occupy movement. We, since this is the Samhain program, or the Halloween program tonight, will be the oft-told tale, The Telltale Heart, written by Edgar Allan Poe and performed by me. And that will be after the next break. And then at the bottom of the second hour, we'll, of course, since it is Friday, we'll do podcast trivia, where you can win a one-year subscription to Malloy Program podcast downloads. So stick around. An idea that came here from I don't know who sent this, because so many people send me emails you don't put your name on, and your email addy is some weird number combination. But there's something here I want to share. I think it's important. This person wrote, when an anarchist, quote, an anarchist-garbed neocon-hired provocateur throws a bottle or breaks a window and tries to melt back into the crowd so the police can't find them, the protest marshals might spray the provocateur with orange paint, not in the face, maybe even just on their back so they don't realize it. Not to say they should spray their clothing with orange paint, but they might think of that themselves. Orange, like boner. That's a good idea. That way you can identify the provocateurs. I talked about this the last hour last night. The next part of it, Then the provocateur might be observed by the protesters throughout the arrest and booking process and followed to see who they contact and who they're paid by. Oops, do we become Big Brother then? No, it's just called protecting yourself, because the Occupy movement now is being seriously infiltrated now by the right-wing sons of bitches who are determined to try to discredit this movement. They're trying, and I'm sure the Koch brothers' money's behind that one, too. Stick around. We'll be right back with The Telltale Heart. Nervous, very, very dreadfully nervous I had been, and am, but why will you say that I am mad? The disease had sharpened my senses, not destroyed, not dulled them. Above all was the sense of hearing acute. I heard all things in the heaven and in the earth. I heard many things in hell. How then am I mad? Hearken and observe how healthily, how calmly I can tell you the whole story. It is impossible to say how first the idea entered my brain, but once conceived, it haunted me day and night. Object there was none. Passion there was none. I loved the old man. He had never wronged me. He had never given me insult. For his gold I had no desire. I think it was his eye. Yes, it was this. He had the eye of a vulture, a pale blue eye with a film over it. Whenever it fell upon me, my blood ran cold, and so by degrees, very gradually, I made up my mind to take the life of the old man and thus rid myself of the eye forever. Now this is the point. You fancy me mad. Madmen know nothing, but you should have seen me. You should have seen how wisely I proceeded, with what caution, with what foresight, with what dissimulation. I went to work. I was never kinder to the old man than during the week before I killed him. And every night, about midnight, I turned the latch of his door and opened it, oh so gently, and then, when I had made an opening sufficient for my head, I put in a dark lantern, all closed, closed, that no light shone out, and then I thrust in my head. Oh, you would have laughed to see how cunningly I thrust it in. I moved it slowly, very, very slowly, so that I might not disturb the old man's sleep. It took me an hour to place my whole head within the opening so far that I could see him as he lay upon his bed. Ha! Would a madman have been so wise as this? And then, when my head was well in the room, I undid the lantern cautiously, oh so cautiously, cautiously, for the hinges creaked. I undid it just so much that a single thin ray fell upon the vulture eye. And this I did for 7 long nights, every night just at midnight. But I found the eye always closed, and so it was impossible to do the work, for it was not the old man who vexed me, but his evil eye. And every morning when the day broke, I went boldly into the chamber and spoke courageously to him, calling him by name in a hearty tone and inquiring how he had passed the night. So you see, he would have been a very profound old man indeed to suspect that every night, just at 12, I looked in upon him while he slept. Upon the 8th night, I was more than usually cautious in opening the door. A watch's minute hand moved more quickly than did mine. Never before that night had I felt the extent of my own powers, of my sagacity. I could barely contain my feelings of triumph. To think that there I was, opening the door little by little, and he not even to dream of my secret deeds or thoughts. I fairly chuckled at the idea. And perhaps he heard me, for he moved on the bed suddenly, as if startled. Now, you may think that I drew back, but no. His room was as black as pitch, with the thick darkness, for the shutters were close, fastened, through fear of robbers. And so I knew that he could not see the opening of the door, and I kept pushing it on steadily, steadily. I had my head in, and was about to open the lantern, when my thumb slipped upon the tin fastening, and the old man sprang up in bed, crying out, "Who's there?" I kept quiet and still, and said nothing.
For a whole hour, I did not move a muscle, and in the meantime, I did not hear him lie down. He was still sitting up in the bed, listening, just as I have done night after night, hearkening to the death watches in the wall. Presently, I heard a slight groan, and I knew it was the groan of mortal terror. It was not a groan of pain or of grief. Oh, no, it was the low, stifled sound that arises from the bottom of the soul when overcharged with awe. I knew the sound well. Many a night, just at midnight, when all the world slept, it has welled up from my own bosom, deepening with its dreadful echo the terrors that distracted me. I say I knew it well, I knew what the old man felt. I pitied him, although I chuckled at heart. I knew that he had been lying awake ever since the first slight noise when he had turned in the bed. His fears had been ever since growing upon him. He had been trying to fancy them causeless, but could not. He had been saying to himself, "It is nothing but the wind in the chimney. It is only a mouse crossing the floor, or it is merely a cricket which has made a single chirp." Yes, he had been trying to comfort himself with these suppositions, but he had found all in vain. All in vain, because death, in approaching him, had stalked with his black shadow before him and enveloped the victim. And it was the mournful influence of the unperceived shadow that caused him to feel, although he never saw nor heard, to feel the presence of my head within the room. When I had waited a long time, very patiently, without hearing him lie down, I resolved to open a little, a very, very little crevice in the lantern. So I opened it. You cannot imagine how stealthily, until at length, a simple dim ray, like the thread of a spider, shot from out the crevice and fell full upon the vulture eye. It was open, wide open, and I grew furious as I gazed upon it. I saw it with perfect distinctness, all a dull blue with a hideous veil over it that chilled the very marrow in my bones. But I could see nothing else of the old man's face or person, for I had directed the ray as if by instinct precisely upon the damned spot. And have I not told you that what you mistake for madness is but over-acuteness of the sense? Now, I say there came to my ears a dull, low, quick sound, such as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I knew that sound well. It was the beating of the old man's heart. It increased my fury as the beating of a drum stimulates the soldier on to courage. But even yet I refrained and kept still. I scarcely breathed. I held the lantern motionless. I tried how steadily I could to maintain the ray upon the eye. Meantime, the hellish tattoo of the heart increased. It grew quicker and louder every instant. The old man's terror must have been extreme. It grew louder, I say, louder every moment. Do you mark me well? I have told you that I am nervous, so I am. And now, at the dead hour of the night, amid the dreadful silence of that old house, so strange a noise as this excited me to uncontrollable terror. Yet for some minutes longer I refrained and stood still, but the beating grew louder. I thought the heart must burst, and now a new anxiety seized me. The sound would be heard by a neighbor. The old man's hour had come. With a loud yell, I threw open the lantern and leaped into the room. He shrieked once only. In an instant, I dragged him to the floor and pulled the heavy bed over him. I then smiled gaily to find the deed so far done. But for many minutes, the heart beat on with a muffled sound. This, however, did not vex me. It would not be heard through the wall. At length, it ceased. The old man was dead. I removed the bed and examined the corpse. Yes, he was stone dead. I placed my hand upon the heart and held it there many minutes. There was no pulsation. He was stone dead. His eye would trouble me no longer. If still you think me mad, you will think so no longer when I describe the wise precautions I took for the concealment of the body. And I worked hastily, but in silence. First of all, I dismembered the corpse. I cut off the head and the arms and the legs. I then took up three planks from the flooring of the chamber and deposited all between the scantlings. I then replaced the boards so cleverly, so cunningly, that no human eye, not even his, could have detected anything wrong. There was nothing to wash out, no stain of any kind, no blood spot whatever. I had been too wary for that. A tub had caught all when I had made an end of these labors. It was 4:00, still dark as midnight. As the bell sounded the hour, they came knocking at the street door. I went down to open it with a light heart, for what had I now to fear? There entered three men who introduced themselves with perfect suavity as officers of the police. A shriek had been heard by a neighbor during the night. Suspicion of foul play had been aroused. Information had been lodged at the police office, and they, the officers, had been deputed to search the premises. I smiled, for what had I to fear? I bade the gentleman welcome. The shriek, I said, was my own in a dream. The old man, I mentioned, was absent in the country. I took my visitors all over the house. I bade them search. Search well. I led them at length to his chamber. I showed him his treasure. Secure, undisturbed, in the enthusiasm of my confidence, I brought chairs into the room and desired them here to rest from their fatigues, while I myself, in the wild audacity of my perfect triumph, placed my own seat upon the very spot beneath which reposed the corpse of the victim. The officers were satisfied. My manner had convinced them. I was singularly at ease. They sat, and while I answered cheerily, they chatted of familiar things. But ere long I felt myself getting pale and wished them gone. My head ached, and I fancied ringing in my ears. But still they sat and still chatted. The ringing became more distinct. It continued and became more distinct. I talked more freely to get rid of the feeling, but it continued and gained definiteness until at length I found that the noise was not within my ears. No doubt I now grew very pale, but I talked more fluently and with a heightened voice. Yet the sound increased, and what could I do? It was a low, dull, quick sound, much like a sound as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I gasped for breath, and yet the officers heard it not. I talked more quickly, more vehemently, but the noise steadily increased. I arose and argued about trifles in a high key and with violent gesticulations, but the noise steadily increased. Why would they not be gone? I paced the floor to and fro with heavy strides, as if excited to fury by the observations of the men, but the noise steadily increased. Oh, God, what could I do? I foamed, I raved, I swore. I swung the chair upon which I had been sitting and grated it upon the boards, but the noise arose over all and continually increased. It grew louder, 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 and still the men chatted pleasantly and smiled. Was it possible they heard not? Almighty God, no! No, they heard! They suspected! They knew! They were making a mockery of my horror. This, I thought, and this, I think. But anything else, anything was better than this agony. Anything was more tolerable than this derision. I could bear those hypocritical smiles no longer. I felt that I must scream or die. And now, again, hark, louder, 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 louder! Villains, I shrieked, dissemble no more. I admit the deed. Tear up the planks. Here, here, it is the beating of his hideous heart.
Before the hour, this hour is being sponsored by Janice Kumling. Thank you, Janice. I got a song here for you. In the valley of the bankers, locking elbows, marching free, rose a sea of 99ers, give us back democracy. In the valley of the slavers, the oppressors of our kin, rose a sea of 99ers, we will take it back again. That was sent to me by the person who didn't sign his or her name. Here's another one. What's this? Mike Papantonio came up with one here. prosecute, get back all the loot. These are chants that you can use when you're demonstrating. Fatherland security, got no place in democracy. No, it's not going to stop. And there has to be, even though the authorities are starting to get a little bit insane about all this, there has to be the ability to to find some kind of humor in this madness. Jacob Sloan has posted on his blog site more of the mainstream media's bizarre coverage of Tuesday night's police brutality in Oakland. A number of blogs have commented on this. Both ABC and CBS local affiliates in Oakland had helicopters providing live feeds as events unfolded in front of Oakland City Hall. All of a sudden, both television channels cut their transmissions when the police began attacking protesters. And both said it was due to their helicopters needing refueling. That's right. Both the ABC and CBS helicopters ran out of fuel at the same time. The moment when the newsworthy events began to occur, one can only say, wow. A blogger named Oakland Local writes, OPD gave us 5 minutes to disperse and then attacked the crowd with tear gas, flash grenades, and rubber bullets. I was there until that point, and I can testify that it was a peaceful march until the police attacked it. Moreover, they just happened to begin firing tear gas into the crowd right after the two major media outlets that were covering it with live feeds turned off their cameras. That coincidence was quite a coincidence. ABC and CBS later claimed their helicopters had to refuel. And they did show footage from later. But what a coincidence that they turned off their cameras just before the police attack. And that their helicopters ran out of gas at precisely the same time. Yeah, you know, the stories that they come up with, this was the night that Scott Olson, the former Marine who survived two tours in Iraq and came back to the streets of Oakland, where he was shot by the police with a tear gas canister. Huh? What else? So much to try to get into a three-hour program, isn't there? It's not really 3 hours. This is from Dan in Indiana regarding Bob Alexander's piece the other night. Mike, once again, Bob Alexander attempts to convey the fundamental root problem that our entire world is under the control of psychopaths. I thank you again for raising this topic. Thanks to Bob and your program, I read Dr. Lobachevsky's book, Political Ponerology, and found it to be the single most profound book I've ever read. I seldom, if ever, disagree with anything you have to say. However, your self-criticism of supposed inability to endure violence in a Gandhian manner is unwarranted. Even Lobachevsky, whose message is clearly that only through understanding of the nature of evil can it be defeated, nonetheless makes very clear that all people have a fundamental right of self-defense and self-preservation. Violence takes many forms, being allowed to die because you cannot afford health care, that's violent, or being put out on the street hungry and cold because your job has been eliminated for corporate profit, that's violence, or a near endless list of social conditions ever present in our country are violent, murderous attacks under the guise of political ideology under a so-called mask of sanity. A quote from Dr. Robert Hare. It is time for the violence to end, and like you, I sincerely hope it can be ended by nonviolent means. But all people have the right to self-defense and self-preservation. It is a fundamental law of nature and fundamental human right. Understanding that these interspecies predators don't give a damn about human life is the key. We both know that it is long overdue that they be forever stopped. I suggest that they have long careers as migrant farm workers at, say, 1/2 minimum wage. And since they cannot afford health insurance, well, then we have a shortage of agricultural workers now, you know. Dan from Indiana. He's referring, of course, to the piece that Bob Alexander wrote last night. You can find it at opednews.com or tvnewslies.org, or probably at this point other websites indeed. Once again, this hour has been sponsored by Janice Kumlein. Thank you, Janice. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. I don't know. What's the rule when you have two vowels together, Kathy? What's the rule? The first one does the talking. Janice Kumlein. Thank you, Janice. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Hi, Truth Seekers. The Malloy Show. It's 7 past the hour. This is our Halloween program, if you haven't figured it out. And we will rebroadcast this program Monday night so that we can take Molly trick-or-treating. We don't have a sponsor this hour? No? Okay. Third hour. All right. All right. From Prairie 2. Sorry, Senator, we couldn't budget a bribe for you this quarter. The stock markets were flat today, with some indexes up slightly and some down on very light trading. Nobody can quite decide if the Eurozone deal will really work. At best, it's only a framework to start from and could fall on its face if investors aren't willing to put hundreds of billions into a stabilization pot. A senior European Union official went to Beijing with hat in hand seeking help, and China's response was positive. Indeed, what does China have to lose? They have an awful lot of euros, and they really don't want to see them trading on par with currency from the, Confederate States of America. Nor does China really want to see the U.S. dollar become the only major currency in the world. They hope to see that role being filled by the renminbi, or the people's currency. But they aren't quite ready for that. Maybe in 5 years, when their economy has eclipsed that of the United States. Given the likelihood of the U.S. collapsing into complete chaos in the next couple of years, the Chinese are probably being too cautious. The U.S. economy is showing some growth. Consumer spending is up and businesses are buying new equipment. The problem is that consumers are spending savings and using what little credit they have left to buy things they have been putting off. This sort of spending will peter out quickly if nothing's done. Business believes this to be true because the only equipment that they're buying is to replace worn-out machines, and they aren't hiring or expanding. Whirlpool, which is the world's largest appliance manufacturer and also a big player in union busting, along with outsourcing to Mexico, announced today a 5,000-person cut in its workforce and the closing of a major plant in Arkansas. The Arkansas plant was only built to break unions in the northern states, but with that accomplished, it's now surplus production. You see, with no middle class, the building of shiny new appliances isn't really needed so much. This doesn't really matter to the 1%. All that matters is that they completely control 100% of everything. We are very close to the tipping point, with core inflation approaching the zero line. Below that lies deflation and economic collapse. Having the Federal Reserve print more money for a QE3 cash infusion isn't going to stop it this time. Massive government spending is the only thing that can put the brakes on, as this would create actual jobs and therefore demand for goods and services. You'll never guess which party is suddenly in favor of massive government spending to preserve jobs. No, it's the Republicans. With reports that the supercommittee is not getting anywhere on balancing the long-term budget, the prospect is looming for massive cuts to the Pentagon budget to be triggered if they don't act in the next few weeks. There would also be cuts to Medicare. But they don't care about that. Republicans are predicting the loss of 1 million jobs and total chaos as the military and, more importantly, the military-industrial complex types won't be able to budget for 2013 given all the, uncertainty. And when they say budget, they mean arranging kickbacks for Republicans. Who says the 1% doesn't suffer in an economic downturn? Well, they don't, but sometimes their lackeys do. From Bruce Enberg, also known as PrairieNumeral2.com. What, we do have a sponsor this hour? Huh. Oh, let me see. Oh, my God! The Malloy Skype and chat rooms are sponsoring this hour. This message written by Maine Coyote. Here's the message. Keep rattling the chains and exposing the macabre brew of Republican tricks. We truth seekers aren't easily spooked by the demons of the right. Rage divine at this magical time, Mike, and blessed be. You see, if you haven't been to the live stream, the Malloy live stream chat room, you wouldn't know that it's populated by, well, you'll have to go there and find out yourself. Hey, thanks, chat room, and thanks, Maine Coyote. Thanks for the sponsorship, you guys. Ha ha ha, they thought I wasn't going to read it. Phone lines are open if you want to call in, 877-996-2556. At the bottom of this hour, we are going to do podcast trivia. All you have to do is come up with the right answer to the multiple choice question I'll give you. And if you get the right answer, you'll get a one-year subscription to Malloy podcast downloads, commercial-free, there for you every morning. Sanchez is in East L.A. Hello, Sanchez.
Senor Malloy.
Hey.
Since this is your Halloween episode, I want to warn you ahead of time. I have a terrible head cold, and I'm afraid if I sneeze, my face will turn into something horribly ugly.
Well, don't sneeze.
Okay. I want to give you like an Occupy LA and Occupy San Diego wrap up if it's okay with you tonight.
Sure.
I watched the live stream this morning of the raid. The San Diego City Police Department as well as the Sheriff's Department were in full regalia and planned this out. About 2 o'clock in the morning, they raided the encampment of Occupy San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
It was, oh my God, 50 people were arrested, including Callie Catt, who's a journalist. Took about an hour and a half for all the tactics to take place. And so I believe they're all released by now. But, it was something captivating for me to watch. You know, I've never undergone an arrest, and watching people get arrested, it just pulls you in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's what I've seen from the live stream of San Diego. The kind of the weekly wrap-up here from Occupy LA, we still continue to be in a unique situation here, Senor, of all the Occupies, you know, amongst my brothers and sisters across the country and across the world. We still have full communication with the mayor's office, the LA City Council, the Los Angeles Police Department, and this is something truly unique that all communications are open right now. And despite what any other corporate media is telling you, I want to read something with your permission, senor, from Jim Lafferty of the National Lawyers Guild. It confirms something, and my spidey senses are not tingling. My bones will be going off, so I'm going with Jim Lafferty tonight when I read this. I hope you don't mind me reading this, okay?
It's not very long, I hope.
Okay. It just says, Sergeant Baker, who speaks for the LAPD on Occupy LA, says that there was a misreport. This was a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
But he tells Jim Lafferty, please tell the Occupy LA members that we have no plans to attack the occupation, and we will not do that. We are determined that whatever happens down the road, we are not going to do what New York City, Atlanta, and Oakland have done. So I can assure you and confirm that I don't feel it in my bones that we're going to get that. We had a great day today. We had a cleansing powwow, Native American tribes. It was truly enlightening today. I saw some light like you wouldn't believe. In case anybody wants to go, the Los Angeles listeners, and I know you got a bunch of KTLK listeners listening right now,
mm-hmm.
I should have checked with Kathy to see if I can read this member's phone number. I don't know what's going to happen if I do that. Is that okay?
Sure.
All right. If you want to hop the bus from Occupy LA, we're going down to San Diego. He will call back and give you the information. I'm sorry, I did not get that. But there's an area code number of the phone number. Here it goes. Area code 619-315-4083. And
Sanchez, let me put you on hold. I'll come back to you and you can give that number again. I've got to take a break here. And we'll come right back with Sanchez in East LA. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Past the hour. What the hell is going on? Oh, that's right. This is our Halloween program. Or Samhain. Depends on how you pronounce it. We're talking with Sanchez in East LA. All right. Before you give that phone number again, what I have heard, Sanchez, as a matter of fact, I haven't heard, I read an editorial in the LA Times that seems to indicate that the city authorities' patience is wearing thin.
Yes.
And that even though your city council president and others welcomed, the mayor welcomed these people, I understand Villaraigosa, the mayor, also handed out ponchos when the weather was wet.
Yes.
And yeah, your city council president, who's that, Garcetti?
Yeah.
Who said the protesters were welcome to stay as long as they wanted to, but all of a sudden now, it seems like it's starting to turn, and I'm just wondering what will happen in L.A. if a move is made, given, you know, I realize L.A. is certainly not Northern California, it's not Oakland, it's not San Francisco,
yeah.
But what's going to happen when the police move in L.A.?
Well, generally, we have little affinity groups and committees that deal with those types of situations, and there are plans already in effect just in case those things should happen. I mean, we study the live stream and see what tactics are being used, and, you know, I watch that stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
I wish to counter what you're saying by also offering what information I have. We understand that certain members of the city council are under pressure. I also understand Villaraigosa's position, but what I'm trying to counter with because I got it straight from, like I said, Jim Lafferty. He's the National Lawyers Guild. Mm-hmm. He's the go-to guy to say, if there's any plans on the books, and he's saying absolutely not. So if this happens, I mean, we're prepared for this. I mean, I go out on these little, I go out on these little actions. We did a take your money out of the bank thing, and we're talking, I'm talking to some of the members. I can't reveal what we're discussing, but I mean, you know, there are contingency plans in effect here. But I mean, I would like to spend a special shout out to one of the people, Mario Brito. He's been on our local news. He's been interviewed quite a bit, and he's one of the people that's working hard to keep all of these channels open. Like I say, the LAPD wants to keep all these channels open, and we have truly a unique situation that no other city around the world has right now. So we're operating on a positive, okay, and we're moving forward. We do understand, Senor, that, you know, something like this may happen. I will go down there and get arrested myself, even in the pouring rain, just to show my solidarity. So I just want to assure you that, like, we understand, but we still keep this positive thing. For example, I forgot to tell you this, Senor. When Barack Obama was in town, our president was in town here for his fundraiser earlier, we were able to occupy the median, the little strip of you know, between the boulevard. I mean, this took a major thing, backed by the LAPD, Occupy LA, and the Secret Service. Now, how many times does that ever happen where a little group, in a matter of free speech and the right to assemble, overwhelms the Secret Service? You know what I'm trying to say here. But, I mean, imagine. I mean, no other group can do that right now. I'm not boasting. I'm just telling you like it is, Senor. There's a twilight thing. I just have to mention this right now because it's on my mind. Our friend Tom Hartman, I just happened to call him this morning, and then I went to the Occupy LA camp. And then they said, like, okay, we're signing up people to go to the Occupy San Diego bus. Okay, so the guy throws me the scratch pad so I can write down my name and email address. As I kneel down to write my name and email address, there is a copy of Tom Hartman's book, What Would Jefferson Do, right beside my knee. Now, how Twilight Zone is that for tonight?
that's Twilight Zone. All right, Sanchez, get rid of your sore throat, or you because
you... Okay, can I give you that number again?
Go ahead.
Okay, area code 619-315-4083. This is like a nice bus. Let's get it packed with people. Let's show our support for Occupation San Diego and for everything else. Once again, por favor, the number is area code 619-315-4083. Just say you would like to have some information about the bus to San Diego, and the gentleman will give you all of the information. As always, Senor, gracias for your time here. Love to everyone and light.
All right. Thanks, Sanchez. I appreciate your report and also your positive energy into this movement. Thanks a lot, Sanchez. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, podcast trivia. So if you want to play, get online now, 877-996-2556. If you get the right answer, you get a one-year subscription to Molloy Program Podcast, commercial-free. 877-996-2556.
I saw Lon Chaney walking with the Queen, doing the werewolves of London. I saw Lon Chaney Jr. walking with the Queen, doing the werewolves of London. I saw a werewolf drinking a pina colada at Trader Vic's.
5:25 before the hour. This is the Malloy program. On our Samhain celebration, our Halloween celebration, is it celebration? I guess Los Dias de los Muertos is a celebration, or El Dia de los Muertos. Anyway, that's what we're doing tonight. Monday night will be a rebroadcast of this program in case you would miss all the fun and frivolity. All right. This hour is sponsored by the Malloy and Skype chat rooms. Over at livestream.com, you can join in that fun and frivolity if Greg lets you in. He is the moderator there. Anyway, the message from the Skype and chat room: keep rattling the chains. This is written by Maine Coyote. Keep rattling the chains and exposing the macabre brew of Republican tricks. We truth seekers aren't easily spooked by the demons of the right. Rage, divine of this magical time, Mike, and blessed be. Well, that's very sweet. Thanks, guys, for, what's this, about the 15th? No, the 18th sponsorship? Hard to say. All right, it's time for podcast trivia. Da, 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 da. It's time once again for, yes, podcast trivia, where you can win a one-year subscription, Malloy podcast downloads, commercial free, send your mailbox every morning, even on those days when it's a repeat. It has a retail value of $56.40, I believe, which means every program is worth 25 cents. Hence, the title, 2-Bit Radio Program. All right, here we go. Mike is in Burlington, Iowa. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm all right. You ready to give this a shot?
Yeah, but with it being your Halloween program, could I make a request for a little song for our former Vice President Dick Cheney? Maybe something like Heartless.
Heartless? If we have it. He is heartless, isn't he?
Yes.
He is a vacuum pump running.
I mean, we should have a thought of Dick Cheney on Halloween, shouldn't we?
I guess we should. All right. Start the music, maestro. All right, Mike, here is your question. It's sort of a question. Former radio talk show host and pizza man Herman Cain has risen to the top of just about every poll taken among Republican voters. This is a clear indication of what? Is it A, Greg Palast is right, we do live in an armed madhouse? B, the Republican Party has become a refuge for fools, clowns, and Ayn Rand wannabes? C, Cain is simply playing the conservative white folks for the fools he knows them to be and is thus getting over in a very big way. D, someone took Herman out to lunch and forgot to take him back to the home before they locked the gate. Or E, probably all of the above.
I think you got to go with all of the above.
I think you're probably right there, Mike. Okay,
But one thing about Herman Cain.
Yeah?
Herman Cain is 100% right in what he says about his tax program.
And what is that?
Well, don't you know what he always says about his tax program? Three words, same word.
999?
Yes. Now do that in as if you were Schultz from Hogan's Heroes. Right answer, wrong language.
I got it. All right. Now, you had an Occupy comment before Kathy gets the information from you.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, the thing is, we should be indicting.
Yeah.
But, no, I was up in Iowa City, and they've got a little Occupy Iowa City up there at the University of Iowa. I don't know. I doubt if Ames has one, but the Big Ten University in Iowa does.
Well, that's
school.
Yeah, well, that's good, especially university. I mean, those are the places. Universities are the places where people still can think. They haven't been out in the world all that long, at least the students haven't, and they still have that purity or close to purity of thought. able to look at a situation and not have their head full of public relations or advertising garbage. I'm probably, you know, stretching a little bit here, but it just seems to me that the younger people's minds are a lot more elastic and less brittle than older people, even though a lot of older people never lose that elasticity. But you know what I'm talking about. So I'm glad to hear that the Big Ten school has the Occupy movement there.
Michelle Bachmann was in town today.
Oh, good.
Went out to see her. I went out to see Ron Paul last week. I'm upset with both of them. No free cookies.
Yeah, no free cookies. How many people were
no
at the Bachmann?
I did this with the head of the Democratic Party back in 2008 because I hadn't shown up at a lot of those events in a period of time, and she said something about it, and I said, well, I came for the free cookies when Biden was here.
Well, no free cookies from Bachmann. How many people were there?
There was a significant amount for both Paul and Bachmann. I would say a few smaller amount for Bachmann. I would say had John Kennedy in 1960 started any of his little things like Bachmann did, that there would have been an outrage because they had a little prayer before she spoke.
Oh, really? How sweet.
And, you know, could you imagine that with a Catholic priest giving a prayer before Kennedy spoke?
Yeah, no.
Or a Mormon giving a prayer before Romney spoke.
Right, right. Oh, my God. All right, Mike, hold on. Kathy will get the pertinent information from you, and congratulations on winning podcast trivia tonight. I hope you enjoy the 25-cent programs that will be pouring into your mailbox. All right, where are we? Oh, yeah, the, you know, in coming up in about, what, about 10 days or less, 12 days? What's the date today? I have no idea. But coming up within the next 2 weeks in Mississippi, there's going to be a ballot measure for voters to consider. I think it is called... The personhood amendment, is that what they're referring to it? And it would define the term person, if it passes, it would define the term person in the state constitution to include eggs. And it would grant fertilized eggs the legal rights and protections that apply to people. I know, this sounds totally insane. I'm referring to human eggs. So eggs would, fertilized eggs would, I don't know, do you take one out for a drink? If this passes, do you celebrate? Hey, egg, you want to go have a drink? Fertilized eggs in the state of Mississippi, if this ballot initiative passes, will have... legal rights and protections, probably lawyers to speak for them and or for its. Or I don't know. What is a fertilized egg? Has the gender been determined when an egg is just fertilized? Technically, I guess, but the little sexual differentiation, yeah, hasn't occurred yet. Anyway, the aim of this is to redefine abortion and turn it into murder. Oh, and contraception. Turn those, abortion, contraception, birth control, turn that from just that, abortion, contraception, and birth control into murder, which will, of course, obliterate a woman's right to make those kinds of private decisions that were granted under the Supreme Court decision Roe v. Wade back in 1973. I mean, this is just goddamn insanity. I mean, top to bottom, this is just madness. Now, according to an editorial here in the Times, besides outlawing all abortions with no exceptions for rape or incest, of course, in Mississippi, I guess that's just, you know, family fun, the incest part, but with no exception for rape or incest or when a mother's or a woman's life is in danger, and the law will or the constitutional amendment would ban any contraception that may prevent implantation of a fertilized egg, including birth control pills. Now, there's some implications here that I know the people in Mississippi are having a hard time considering, because the whole state is led by a bunch of goddamn morons. But if this passes, it'll curtail medical research involving embryos. It will close fertility clinics, you know, where people go to get pregnant. It'll put doctors in legal jeopardy for providing needed medical care that might endanger a pregnancy. Can you imagine a woman who has a form of cancer that requires chemotherapy? And if she is pregnant, perhaps doesn't even realize she's pregnant, and then finds out that the 2-month zygote inside of her has been hideously deformed because of the chemicals she's received because of chemo. If she aborts, she can be charged with murder. Sounds like the basement of a Catholic seminary. It's Halloween program. This hour has been sponsored by the Malloy and Skype chat rooms. This message of sympathy written by Maine Coyote. She writes, keep rattling the chains and exposing the macabre brew of Republican tricks. We truth seekers aren't easily spooked by the demons of the right. Rage divine at this magical time, Mike, and blessed be. Thank you, chat room and Maine Coyote. Thanks a lot. I appreciate your constant and ongoing support. Talking about this ballot initiative that is going before the voters in Mississippi on November 8th, which will change the definition of a person in the state constitution to include fertilized eggs. It's just astonishing. In addition to eliminating all abortions with no exceptions for rape or incest or when a woman's life is in danger, it just doesn't matter to these bastards. It really doesn't. The initiative will also ban any contraception that may prevent implantation of a fertilized egg, including birth control pills. But there's more. If this thing passes, it'll curtail medical research involving embryos. It will shutter fertility clinics. So anybody in Mississippi who wants to go to a fertility clinic hoping to get pregnant, we'll no longer have that option in the great state of Mississippi. It'll put doctors in legal jeopardy for providing needed medical care that might endanger a pregnancy. Now, aside from being the woman, a pregnant woman, imagine a doctor who sees a patient who has some form of cancer and explains to her, well, I cannot treat you. I have to let you die, because if I treat you, and this causes a spontaneous abortion or a miscarriage or harms your fertilized egg, then I could be charged with murder. So, ma'am, I'm sorry. Please leave my office. You have to go die somewhere else or seek treatment outside the great state of Mississippi. This is how sick these sons of bitches are in Mississippi. Pregnant women also could become subject to criminal prosecution. A fertilized egg would be eligible to inherit money. A fertilized egg. It would also be eligible to be counted when drawing voting districts by population. Now, how are you going to do that, huh? How are you gonna, you see, this is so Mississippi. This is so Mississippi, isn't it? Huh? And because a multitude of laws in Mississippi use the term person or people, there obviously there's going to be no shortage of unintended consequences. Now, a similar ballot measure was rejected by Colorado voters. Colorado, oh my God, in 2008 and 2010. But in Mississippi, which has already imposed so many restrictions that the state has one clinic where an abortion can be performed, there's a real possibility that voters will not react as wisely as they did in Colorado. Well, count on it. You're talking about Mississippi, for Christ's sake. Mississippi, where sons of bitches, not all of them, not all the people in Mississippi, but the ones who come up with this idea, how long ago did they learn to walk upright? A month? You know, these Mississippi legislators can't spell their own damn names. And Haley Barbour, give me a break. This criminal sucker... who, when he was head of the Republican National Committee, took money from the Chinese to influence campaigns in the United States, and then sat back with his big thumb sticking in his mouth, saying, "I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't do any of that. I didn't do any of that. Man, goddamn, you people are crazy. I didn't do any of that." Just a criminal, just an absolute criminal. Ah. So anyway, now if this is not sick enough for you, if you think I'm just picking on Mississippi Republicans, no. Both the Republican and Democratic candidates for governor in Mississippi have endorsed the measure. Huh? even there's something about Mississippi. There really is. It's just horrifying. So if you plan on being a citizen of Mississippi, if you're going to go to the university there, if you are going to live there, if your company transfers you there, and you happen to get cancer, and you happen to have an early first-term pregnancy, you're not going to be able to get treatment because the doctor's going to say, "I'm sorry, ma'am, there's not too much I can do for you, because if this thing passes, I might be charged with murder. I might be charged with all kinds of things." This is madness. I mean, this is just madness. Come on, Haley. Haley Barbour prays for another hurricane like Katrina, because you know what Haley Barbour did and his crew of thugs in state government. They got all that federal FEMA money. They got all that relief money to help rebuild down there in Mississippi Gulf Coast. You know what they did with it? They built condos near Ole Miss, near the University of Mississippi. Now, take a look at your map and tell me how far that is from the coast. There was no Katrina damage up there at all, but, you know, the old boys from the Ole Miss alumni, they wanted, "Come on, Haley, goddamn, we got to have a place to stay when we come into town for the football game. Get some of that money and build us a condo," which is exactly what this porcine son of a bitch did.
Let's go.
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. This is our annual Halloween program. It'll be rebroadcast Monday, which is the actual Halloween. But we will be taking Molly trick-or-treating that night. This hour is sponsored by Derek Wolford. wait a minute. Never mind that. This hour is sponsored by Anonymous. I'll tell you what. You know, I really do appreciate the sponsorships from you folks. You have to put a little note or something in here, though, to let me know how you want me to identify yourself. Anonymous is sponsoring this hour. Thanks, Anonymous. All right, back to your calls. Mitch is in Hernando, Mississippi. Hello, Mitch.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you? What's it feel like to live in Mississippi?
Well, this is this Initiative 26. They've got signs everywhere for it, and I think the majority of the people that are pushing these signs haven't even read it, don't even know what it's about, and don't know what will happen once it passes. And, you know, they think it's just a matter of is it a life or is it not a life, and that's not the case, and what you're talking about is true. You know, my wife had 5 miscarriages before she had the first baby, and we were told by an attorney that she would be investigated for murder for having those miscarriages.
Mm.
And, you know, if this law were in place at that time, you know. And then also, you were mentioning the birth control. There's some women that aren't on that just because of birth control, but because it helps to regulate their cycle and everything like that, as far as the bleeding and all that. And so, you know, that won't be able to happen anymore, you know. And so, it's kind of crazy to see, and I bet it probably will pass because, you know, every church has got it in front of their, right next to their sign, and, you know, it's all over the place. So.
And this is the part that is maddening, because the authorities don't explain to people what this constitutional amendment would really require. You know, most folks, I'm sure you're right, most folks are going to say, well, this is just an anti-abortion initiative. And when they find out what it really is, of course, if it passes, then it'll be too late in order to remove a voter-approved constitutional amendment. You've got to reverse the process. That can take forever. So it's a shame that the institutions in Mississippi, the government, the churches, the business community, refuse to be honest about this. And you know, I have a feeling that it will pass.
I'll bet it will. And like I said, because the people you talk to are not informed, they don't know what will happen, and they think it's just about life, and that's it. And they don't realize all the fine print that goes along with it, and it's sickening.
I hear you. All right, Mitch, thanks for checking in. Hang in there. I appreciate your call. I hope you call again. Take care. A couple of quick emails here about this. Bob Kincaid over at Hit on Radio Network writes, Mike, beyond the surface nastiness of Mississippi stands, ballot measure 26, lie things every bit as vile. This is just another manifestation of the South's resurrection of the pernicious old doctrine of nullification. The last time they went into a nullification frenzy, 600,000 Americans died. The South needs to be hammered loud and long over this before they get God only knows how many thousands of real citizens killed. Not just zygotes, I might add. Bob goes on, I've never been a stock-the-bunker type person, but at this point I'm convinced the South really does want to try the whole secession gig again. Failures now to point that out, confronted directly, may well have disastrous consequences in years to come that may be nearer than we think. Bob. Yeah, I know. I just have a feeling in that regard that at some point, I mean, the way things are going politically, culturally, that at some point the United States of America is going to become the Federated States of America. I've talked about this before, that this country is going to, and if this happens, let's hope it happens peacefully, but the experiment that the framers talked about will be ended, and this country will divide itself peacefully, we can hope, into four or five different independent, yet, you know, still federated, kind of like the Soviet, the old Soviet Union. Or now, I believe the Russian Federation is still still in power, right? Or still a political entity, right? Russian Federation. But the Federation of American States has a real possibility. I can't say a real chance or real probability, but a real possibility of coming into existence. There are cultural divides in this country that have no business being there. They really don't. But they're being developed and pushed by the swine who operate on talk radio and television constantly. You know who the swine are. I don't need to name these bastards. Because to them, it's sport. It's just fun. It's a fun thing to do. You know, you get to a certain level of wealth, and if you're a psychopath, literally, I'm not tossing the phrase around like, oh, he's a bum. No, no, a real psychopath, a real sociopath, as Beck or Hannity or Limbaugh or the rest of these people, Neil Bortz, if you're a real sociopath, you do this kind of stuff for sport, putting people against people. You know, union workers against non-union workers, blacks against whites, Christian against Jew, atheist against believer. You know, you just do this because it's sport. And of course, their hope is that they cause bloodshed and gunfire and things that go boom. And it's really kind of sick, isn't it? But, you know, we have freedom of speech in this country for certain elements. I've said this a million times. If a foreign power came to this country and did what passes as free speech by some of these rat bastards on right-wing radio and television, we would round them up and either execute them on the spot or send them to Guantanamo or deport them or something. But we wouldn't allow them to rip our country to pieces. But because most of these anti-American haters are white, they're Caucasian males, and they're, you know, conservative, they're left alone to do their damage, and that's a shame. So I probably will not be alive to see it. I'm not saying it's going to happen next week, but I just see eventually such a thing happening. And regarding that Mississippi ballot initiative, Bruce Enberg writes, half of fertilized eggs don't implant themselves anyway, and half of those that do implant detach spontaneously. All of these fertilized eggs end up being flushed, and in most cases, this is unknown by the woman. The law would make almost all women guilty of concealing the death of a person when they flush the commode. Because, you know, ignorance of the law is no excuse, right? We're all told that from the time we're little kids. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. So a woman who spontaneously aborts or miscarries, as my last caller was talking about, Kathy had four miscarries before Molly. And if this ballot initiative passes, women who better be able to explain how and why that miscarriage or spontaneous abortion occurred. Because if they don't have a good excuse or a good reason, and even if they do, I mean, if I accidentally kill somebody, I can still be charged with manslaughter. This is what Mississippi is going, and I'm sure the people of Mississippi are going to vote this into law on November 8th. This hour is brought to us by, or brought to you by, Anonymous. Email here from Elaine. I'm paraphrasing some of what she wrote, but she talks about the potentially life-threatening consequences of the anti-life, anti-big government, well, unless it's your bedroom, your doctor's office, the ER, fertility clinic, stem cell research labs, and women's bodies, then it's not no big government. This personhood law. For example, Elaine talks about ectopic pregnancies. She writes, when I worked in the ER, and in that field, it seemed we treated a patient with an ectopic at least every week. And the treatment, usually tubal ligation, depending on exact placement. Ironic, isn't it, that the state with abstinence-only education, the highest teen pregnancy rate, the highest infant mortality rate, and the highest dropout rate would present this law for the voters to decide? Also, Elaine writes, if a so-called fertilized egg is considered a live person and a corporation has the same rights as a person, this could lead to some interesting interpretations for major corporations, don't you think? Yeah. Well, if a corporation put a product on the market or distributed a product, say, some sort of food. Oh, I don't know. Pick something. How about, cantaloupe. And if a woman with a two-month or one-month pregnancy going happened to eat poisoned cantaloupe and got very, 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 very sick and was on the verge of dying, and in that process of her body being filled with toxins, the fetus died. The zygote died. There was a spontaneous abortion, miscarriage. Well, the corporation that distributed the food, since it has all the political rights of a person, that corporation then could be charged with murder, right? Of course, how do you lock up or execute, if it's in Mississippi, how do you execute a corporation? And who is going to speak for the zygote? Will there be a new... I know, University of Mississippi could put together a whole new four-year law degree course based on the law involving zygotes and fertilized eggs, the rights and privileges appertaining to such a microscopic creature. Now, I don't know how you would do that because, a fertilized egg is, upon immediate fertilization, is what size, Kathy? About the size of a period at the end of a sentence? Is that about right? So what happens? Does the lawyer, is there some kind of a study on how to dip that out of a commode if a woman spontaneously aborts and... it comes out with a lot of cramping and bleeding. How do you get the corpse? There has to be a dead person in order to charge a woman with murder. Although circumstantial evidence might, a bloody commode and all of a sudden she has a blighted ovum or something. It's not there anymore. Is that proof of murder? I don't know. And the company, the corporation that distributed poison cantaloupes, inadvertently, is that corporation charged with manslaughter? Do you go back to the farm where they were grown? Mississippi is such a forward-thinking state, isn't it? Always has been. Always will be. I can't even conceive, but like our caller from Mississippi said, the churches are way behind this. The Christian churches, I'm sure. I doubt if you would drive by a synagogue and see a sign that says support Prop 26 or, you know. But I think probably, like our caller said, you're going to find support for this from the pulpit and outside near the church's marquee. Right? So, this will probably be the first step. Well, not the first step, because we're talking about Mississippi, but another step toward absolute gibbering insanity on the part of the state of Mississippi.
The devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat. And he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, "Devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. Because I told you once, you son of a gun, I'm the best there's ever been." He played, "Round and round, run, boy, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. And we don't fight no child, no."
Jay Farner.
Sounds silly or spooky, probably a little bit of both. 25 before the hour, this is the Malloy program on our Halloween program, our Samhain program. It'll be rebroadcast Halloween, which will be Monday night, while we take Molly trick-or-treating. This hour is sponsored by Anonymous. Thank you, Anonymous. I appreciate it. A couple more emails very quickly here, and then back to your phone. The phone's from John regarding this ballot initiative that's coming up in Mississippi on November 8th. And again, it has nothing to do with protecting life. It has everything to do with stomping the hell out of women. But John writes, "Mike, if the fetus is a person, then the parents get another deduction on income tax if the fetus were conceived before January 1st. Can you imagine the amount of intercourse in the second half of the year, and especially December? A child conceived in January through March is of no concern tax-wise. And, of course, twins, triplets, etc. are really a bonanza, especially in the third quarter. Mississippi is really a forward-looking state. And there are a lot more implications, too." God, it's just madness. Come on, don't you feel that way? Like this country has become totally insane. Anne writes, "Mike, regarding Mississippi law, let me give the backstory here. We're talking about if somebody eats poison melon, a woman who's 6 weeks pregnant or something, and miscarries or whatever." Anne writes, "Mike, the corporations would claim that it was the woman's fault because she chose to eat the tainted melon. They would not assume any liability. The corporation wouldn't. After a Vanguard case like this, they would then put into law that corporations can never be held responsible. It's like when people were trying to hold the mainstream media responsible. They ran for cover saying, 'Hey, we're just infotainment,' thus no culpability." And here's the kicker question that Anne asked. I ask myself this question all the time. Anne closes by saying, "How is it that I spent so many years as a kid when things made sense? And in today's world, nothing makes sense anymore." You know, William in Hollywood writes to me a lot, and he has that same essential question. So do I. How did this happen? I mean, a day doesn't go by. I look at, I'm no fan of Democrats, but I look at these filthy Republicans who are, doing exactly what Mitch McConnell said they would do. They're not going to allow a single thing to happen in order, they think, to defeat Barack Obama in 2012. Jobs, the few that would be created with Barack Obama's jobs plan, Republicans don't give a goddamn. No. Anything that would help this country right now, no. No. How did it become like this? Good question, Ann. I have no idea either. And Jeanette writes, oh my God, investigating women for murder when they have miscarriages? As if a miscarriage isn't traumatic enough to treat women as guilty until proven innocent of intentionally killing their babies? I don't know, Mike. Something is really a sometimes it's really a challenge to maintain one's belief in nonviolence. I guess it's not supposed to be easy. Jeanette. And somebody writes, how did this happen? TV. That's probably true to a certain extent. All right, Stephen in Burbank's been holding on for almost an hour. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
Absolutely excellent. No brag, just fact.
Okay.
Here's a Halloween-esque perspective, and it's really spooky. It concerns China. We consider that China has been a civilization for more than 6,000 years.
Uh-huh.
It's had its ups and downs. They have studied what they call, quote, human nature, unquote, and they understand psychology. And when they look at the West and they look at how the West has subjugated movements for social justice around the world, and even some that said social justice and really weren't, they began to understand who they were dealing with. And after the collapse of the Soviet Union and everything started going downhill for the working class, they started thinking about that soon they're going to be knocking on the door. And they did. And they said, here, you're going to play our game. And the Chinese said, yeah, okay, what's your game? And the West said, capitalism. Oh, what do we know about capitalism? Well, we'll try to figure this out. And here's what the Chinese understand about psychology. All those empty suits with the infantile mentality, people like Bernanke, people like Friedman, people like Greenspan, they understand it completely. And when the Chinese start saying, well, when's the next quarter rolling around? They look at the calendar. Well, here it is. And what was the ebb and flow of what's happening? They'll know exactly what to do and how to do it because they are so predictable. The Chinese invented chess. Is that true? I don't know. I think they did, Mike.
I don't know. When I look at traditional chess pieces, I would say no. They didn't invent it. They invented a mahjong, but I don't think they invented chess. It just may be that they will, as you point out, learn to be very good chess players.
Well, that also. And when they see that people like Donald Trump is going, oh yeah, if I'm president, I'm gonna up their tariffs, and I could just see him saying, sure, we'll allow you to up the tariffs. Give us the money you owe us. You know, and also the Chinese know when to hold them, they know when to fold them. And they know when to toss the lollipops into the playpen for the toddlers.
Right, but Stephen, I know that you do not take anything this lunatic Donald Trump says as anything other than cartoon character talk. Every time this guy says something, I expect to see it pop above his head in one of those word balloons. Donald Trump isn't real. This miserable little rat bastard. I mean, he is, apparently he's just desperate for attention. He'll do anything for attention. I just wish Donald Trump is another one. How does this society produce people like Donald Trump who claims to be this business genius? I mean, he's so last century to begin with, but he claims to be this business genius. And he's just a punk. He operates on other people's money. He hires architects to build huge, great, big, splashy edifices so rich people can move in. Trump is a punk. And I don't know why media continue to quote him. What the hell's the point?
Well, the Chinese understand his mentality completely.
Oh, yeah, sure. Of course they do. And they would be willing to jerk him around. I'm sure they're just saying, Donald, the Donald, give us a chance to completely dominate you punk. It's just, oh, man, I don't know. This is crazy. This is just crazy.
It is. But listen, if we take it.
Be careful trick-or-treating. Watch out they don't put candy with razor blades in your bag on Monday night, okay?
Okay.
Okay, Stephen, thanks. Take care. Remember all that craziness? Remember? When was that? When was it, Kathy? 10, 15 years ago? Remember they set up, doctor's offices would stay open so the kids could bring in their bag of candy to be x-rayed, or was it hospital emergency rooms, I guess. Emergency rooms, right. they're going to put razor blades in your candy. Oh, my God. Jeremy's in Providence, Rhode Island, listening on Sirius. Hello, Jeremy.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, actually speaking with Kathy off the line, I don't know if you're familiar with Sirius XM runs commercials for Liberty University on your program.
Oh, no.
You gotta love that.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, you're talking about, the Federated States of America and,
right.
The possibility of subdivisions. Well, what's your feeling on maybe going back to having states' rights? I mean, I live in Rhode Island. I kind of don't care if Oklahoma can't have abortions. I mean, if you want an abortion, move out of Oklahoma.
Well, the reason it's important is because we made a pact, a compact, 230 years ago that we would be the United States of America, and we wrote a constitution that said, look, if we're going to be a country and we're going to offer citizenship, then here are the rules that the citizens have to abide by. I mean, that's all. It's not all that difficult, Jeremy. So as long as we are a United States of America with one constitution, then we should abide by those rules. If the idea of breaking the United States into a confederation of, five parts or six parts, regional parts. Okay, but until that time, we can't do so-called states' rights. What do we do with a state that decides to violate the Constitution? Do we invade and murder everybody? Do we lock them all up? I think the big hope is that the people who run the states are intelligent enough to respect the Constitution. Of course, in the case of Mississippi, that obviously is not the case. And a lot of southern states is not the case. Jeremy, I have to leave it there. Thanks, pal. Anonymous. This program, again, will be rebroadcast Monday night because it's been so much fun tonight, our Halloween program. So don't call in Monday. Back to your calls in just a second. Tim from L.A. is going to explain chess to us, well, the origins of chess. Tim writes, it's commonly believed to have originated in Northwest India during the Gupta Empire, where its early form in the 6th century was known as Chaturanga, which is Sanskrit for four divisions of the military. They were the infantry, the cavalry, the elephants, and chariotry, represented by the pieces that would evolve into the modern pawn, knight, bishop, and rook, respectively. Not in China, but it is from Asia, Tim writes. Well, there you go. You see, if you would have been listening to the program tonight, you would not know that. I certainly didn't know it. Charles is in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hello, Charles.
Hey, Mike. How are you tonight?
I'm all right. How about you?
Not too bad. I really enjoyed your reading of The Telltale Heart. That's something I really look forward to every year.
Well, thanks a lot.
And you did a great job. Just another thing I want to point out. I think the Occupy protests are a fantastic thing, and I'm really happy this is spreading worldwide. But I think something else needs to happen in this country. It's baffling to me why the Democrats have been so lackluster, have been so passive in challenging Republicans on their hypocrisy. I mean, it's astounding to me.
Oh, yeah.
After eight years of Bush, Republicans are claiming to be the party of fiscal responsibility.
I know.
Have any credibility?
And the Democrats, you know, you're so right. The Democrats just sit there with these blank stares on their faces, and I think it's because, like a lot of people are starting to realize now, this is not a Democrat-Republican issue anymore. It's not a left-right issue. This is a corporatist versus non-corporatist confrontation that is slowly building. The political parties in the white or in the government, including the legislative and executive branch, are essentially immaterial. They really are, because they both respond now. It's just that one party responds more greedily with their mouths open and their fangs bared than does the other party to what corporate America or predatory capitalism keeps offering them, great big chunks of meat that happens to be the heart and soul of this country. So, Democrats, the Democratic Party, I should say, is just an embarrassment. It's just an embarrassment.
Well, have you noticed that any time a Democrat does speak up, like people like Dennis Kucinich and Alan Grayson and Howard Dean, they're quickly marginalized by their own party.
Oh, sure.
I mean, they're called troublemakers. I mean, what they're supposed to challenge the Republicans.
But there's the proof. There is the proof of what we're talking about, that the Democratic Party is as much the problem, in a way more so. I mean, it is clear that the leadership and the candidates in the Republican Party are definitive sociopaths. But it's also clear that the leading lights in the Democratic Party do exactly what you just said. When someone among them rises up and says, wait a second, this is craziness, they're immediately marginalized and called a fool. Or a clown or a radical, which is a clear indication that the Democratic Party is on just hell-bent on a self-defeating course. And nothing's going to turn them around. Nothing.
They're basically enablers.
There you go. That's the word I've been looking for. Yeah.
All right, Mike. Well, great job. Love your show.
Thanks, Charles. I appreciate it very much. Thanks for calling in tonight. Yeah, I know it's just kicking a dead horse, as the expression goes. I hate that expression because I love horses, but to constantly over and over and over again on this program to talk about the ineffectiveness and the ridiculousness of the Democratic Party. When it should be fighting tooth and nail against these neo-fascist bastards on the other side of the aisle. But they're not. And they won't. And they can't. Because they don't own themselves anymore. The Republican Party was subsumed by predatory capitalism 30 years ago. And the Democratic Party held out, elements of the Democratic Party held out for a while, but they also now have been just swallowed by the predatory people, capitalists, whatever you want to call them, who are hell-bent on destroying everything in their greed and their insatiable greed. Oh, my God. Just like we started the program tonight, reading that little bit about, you know, it's not us, the 99%. We're not involved in fracking. We didn't ask these energy companies to start injecting toxic materials deep underground and blowing apart strata of rock that have been there for who knows how long, millions of years, in order to get at gas. I mean, you know, we are not ordering these sons of bitches to cut down huge swaths of the Amazon jungle, which is considered to be the lungs of the world. We're not, you know, you and I are not demanding that the Alberta tar sands be left completely alone, because as I forget his name, but an expert has said, a climatologist said, just digging this stuff up and pumping it will be essentially game over for the planet. You know, it's not you and me. They're not the 99% that are doing that. It's the 1%. And there's nobody around to hold them in check. Hey, listen, have a great weekend. I'll see you Tuesday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Beautiful friend. This is the end. My only friend, the end. Oh.
Jay Farner here with